Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two gentlemen? Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like my PLB and Stacey Natras takes, unpopular. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and the creator of Waves, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, buddy?
It's going pretty good. I'm actually, Mike, I'm green with envy. Our listeners should know that Mike was kind enough to host,
coming right off
host
the top,
some
eh?
of our some of our friends at his new home for the Islanders game. And while his house is probably less than 2 minute drive from my home, it might as well be on a different planet.
Okay.
It is truly a beautiful home, Mike.
Well, thank you.
Mike, you are truly the king of real estate bling. The mayor of Mortgage Town, royalty of South Winnipeg Realty, you are the black adder of the corporate ladder. I am truly the proletariat to your petite bourgeoisie. Our listeners might be interested to know that Mike and I have another podcast coming out called Class Warfare, Financial Losers in the 21st Century Economy. And speaking of those on the outside looking in, let's talk some Winnipeg Jets.
Oh, you have had the week off, eh? that was a lot of work, and I appreciate it. No, thank you. And I didn't know if you were going to go top rope right off the beginning with that, but I should have known better. Kudos.
Well, Mike, the best part of the evening was the hospitality, your wife's hospitality. I think I'm still full from all the wonderful food she made.
We did overserve.
Yes, your daughter is beautiful, and I hope your new dog won't chew up all the expensive furniture in the coming weeks. You know, Mike, just buy new stuff. Apparently, you can afford it.
Oh, my God. I walked right into that one. Okay, Winnipeg Jets check-in time. Okay, so our last podcast aired March 3rd. Jets had 7 games since then. They went a robust 4-2-1. And I'll start here. I wanted to get your opinion. I thought in those 7 games, and we'll see if our thinking aligns, and I'm sort of springing this on you, but I thought in those, the Jets only played, in my estimation, sort of 2 typically very bad Jets games. And one of them was actually a win. But what were your thoughts?
Well, again, I think largely I agree with you. It was a mixed bag of performance, but it did trend towards the positive. You had a very impressive, almost dominant win over Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
You had an outstanding performance against the Rangers in which they got goalied. Okay? You had a resilient outing on the road in New Jersey's where I thought that at the moment it looked like New Jersey was going to take over the game.
That was one of the bad ones.
Yeah, the Jets climbed back and took the game back and controlled the game. The game in St. Louis was excellent, and the game against Vegas, although was a great outcome, I thought was absolutely sloppy, and there wasn't a lot of energy in the game.
Yeah, Vegas just wasn't very good, and I don't know if they are very good. They seem to have a real problem, and we'll probably get into playoff implications, but, you know, they've been sliding down the standings for a while now. And again, it's a one-game sample size because we haven't seen them very much, but I felt that we were, even sloppily, we were a better team, and yeah. I'm not sure what's going on there. On the Rangers game, the Faceoff Hockey Network, the company that we belong to, the Nick who runs the podcast and website for the Rangers, he has that 2018-2019 Winnipeg Jets vibe. You and me were going back on Twitter, and you had, I thought, very correctly said, like, we deserve to win this. We've had abundance of chances. We've been the better team. We've been driving the play, and we got goalied, just like you said. And his response was so reminiscent of what we used to do. I don't know. I think we've been pretty good, and we've been stuck in there, and your chances haven't been. And I'm like, this is exactly what teams with their are okay with really, really good goaltending say, because that echoes exactly what we were doing. I didn't have the heart to tell them that, but we absolutely should have had a better outcome in that game, and quite honestly, statistically, was one of our better ones. And that the Devils game and the Islanders game, I thought, were our weak ones. The rest of them, the Stars, and I don't know if I've ever seen this. I'm sure it happens all the time. But the fact that we played them four times, all four games have gone to OT, and three of them have been a 4-3 score. We're setting a lot of records lately, both individually and as team. I don't know if that's a record in a four-game series for three of them to be the same. They just have our number in OT.
Literally.
No,
just a number. They have a number between the two teams.
Four. Yeah,
yeah. So, yeah, you're talking about numbers, and they tend to tell a good story, like a lot of the story. Like back to the Rangers game. I mean, so what do the numbers say? Well, we outshot the Rangers 46-22. We out high danger chanced them 13-5.
Yeah.
And destroyed them in expected goals by a score of 4.22 to 1.62. So is that even? I don't know. And that's why I like numbers, because you can watch the game with your heart. But, you know, it's also okay to look at the game with your head. And that's what the numbers help balance those two out.
Right.
And you're right.
The compliment.
That's right. I mean, we played really well against the Stars. Our expected goals in that game were 4.97, which I think was the third highest of the entire season for us. We created a ton of high danger chances, 22-14. And we outshot them 42-34. Now, it's not a shooting competition. It's not a high danger chance creation competition, and it's not an expected goals competition. It's a goals competition, right? An actual goals competition.
Yeah, you win by winning.
You win by winning, right? And we got, so I think the evidence is pretty clear that we got goalied against the Ranger, and we played well, but, you know, probably had a breakdown here or there that cost us against Dallas. They seem to have our number this year. But that was preceded. I thought, you know, if we want to look at the good, that 7-4 defeat of Tampa, I think really, listen, good teams like Tampa have bad nights too.
Absolutely.
Right? It was a Tuesday in Winnipeg. It was cold.
Probably not a game they're getting really up for.
No, but at the same time,
we still beat them.
They play on Tuesdays all the time. They play against inferior opponents all the time, right? And destroy them. This was a really good effort by the Jets. And, you know, they again, we're talking about numbers. They outshot Tampa 33-24, out high danger chance them 15-13, and had an expected goals of 4.7 to the Bolts, 2.74. A dominating performance. I thought they were the better team in each of the three periods. There weren't any extended periods of poor play where Tampa took control. It's a really good stretch. I think you really correctly identified it sort of lulled a little bit in New Jersey and
yeah, we had a good first and third, and we had a lull. We had a really bad second period, and same with the Blues. We, you know, both of those games, both wins, we had some lulls in play throughout, but I thought, I 100% agree, I thought the Tampa game was one of our better ones all season in terms of consistency over 60 minutes.
And the St. Louis game wasn't far off. I thought it was a really solid game by the Jets. I thought the Jets were clearly the better team in all of the metrics we would previously noted. They were on top of all of them. And then they come back home. I mean, it was old school Jets at home. Their shooting percentage against the Golden Knights was 30.4%. 30.4% shooting percentage. Listen. You know, let's ride that for the rest of the year. No, the Jets are outshot, outchanced. You know, lost the expected goals against Vegas. I thought
we should sync, and we're going to do this in real time, because I had 27.78 shooting percentage, and it doesn't really matter. But it does highlight. You know, I think you and I are always in sync that numbers support what they're a good complement to what you're seeing on the ice, but it also is an indication that some of these expected goals numbers, I was giving a really good look the other day in terms of exactly how they calculate these, and it's, you know, very impressive for someone to be able to come up with this and then track it, but there is some ambiguity and some subjectivity to it.
Oh, for sure.
It's not an exact science, so, you know, I know that's stating the obvious a little, but it doesn't hurt to say it, because you and I both, I think, really not lean on, but I'm a proponent of advanced stats, and so, you know, we should probably make that caveat clear.
Absolutely. The advanced stats 5 years from now will be better than what we're talking about today, just as the stats today are better than they were five years ago, pardon me. And so I think that they're useful for discussion purposes. I don't think, as you indicate, they're not absolutes. So in terms of the shooting percentage, whether it be 27 or 34, it was just the puck was finding the net for the Jets on this particular evening. I think they had seven different goal scorers. Hell, Logan Stanley
fucking scored.
Even scored. And
how's the weather up there?
And I have a little bit more to say about Logan Stanley in a little bit. But but yeah, it was just one of those nights where the puck was finding the back of the net. It was fun. I had all three seats in our group. I took my two sons. So it was an awesome night. For there to be a lot of goals and for there to be a lot of action, a lot of high event hockey occurring. So, it was really, really fun game to take the boys to. It was fun to see the Jets win. And, you know, I think generally, and I think we'll get into this a little bit more, but generally this good stretch of games and this good stretch of performances, which is, it's not only the outcomes, it's the performances that have been pretty good as well, have corresponded with the return of Nick Ehlers.
Thank you. Excellent. I had that. That was a point I definitely wanted to make, and he didn't make it into the pre-boarding announcement, so I did want to make sure that we shouted him out, so good for you.
Absolutely. Now, Mike, we had some fun last week with, you know, what the five things I learned in the last bit of games. I have five more. Do you want to hear them?
Yep, I'm going to set some picks here.
Okay. I thought I got off to a good start. These may not be as funny, but I'll give it a shot. Okay, so what did we learn in these last five games? Well, Jansen Harkins and Christian Vesalainen are in a heated battle to be the most non-impactful player of the year.
I 100% agree. I had that written for later, so I'll touch base on it, but okay. Couldn't agree more.
Okay, Nick Ehlers is really good. I think that comes forward. We definitely learned that in the last little stretch.
1,000%.
Not that was ever really questioned on this podcast, but I think the level of his importance to this group is really shining.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder, right?
Absolutely.
Like, I had grown accustomed to the lineup without him, and just the instant influx of energy and play driving. Honestly, he's good for 2 to 3 monumental scoring chances a game. Yeah. Sometimes he's very effective with those, sometimes not, but always a plus.
Absolutely. The Jets don't like it when other teams try or check them really hard.
Kids, you tried your best and you failed miserably. The lesson is never try.
And I'm really kind of thinking of the, well, you know, even in the Devils game, I'm thinking of the Islanders game.
Me too. Perfect.
And in the Devils game, there were stretches where that quick young team that they have.
And they're fast and better than I thought. Sorry,
yeah.
I interrupted you.
And they were, no, it's okay. And they were on the Jets at times. But as you would get with a team that is quite young from stem to stern, is that there were lulls in their play. And that's when the Jets were able to take control of the game back, especially in the third period. All right, so again, you know, there were times where Jets were like, oh, the Devils were all over them. So again, as I said, credit to the Jets for fighting back on that, but boy, they don't like it when other teams are you know are hard pressing them at all. So here's one I think you'll like, Mike. It's a true or false. Are you ready?
I like it. Okay.
Adam Brooks is a child actor who is doing deep research for an upcoming movie. True or false?
True. He is. It's a prequel to Mighty Ducks. He's the early version of Emilio Estevez, only a little smaller than Emilio Estevez. And I heard that through the Hollywood papers. So good for you for exposing
nice.
It. Unbelievable.
Nice. Oh, my goodness. He looks like he won a contest. Anyways. Okay. Is it possible to send the Jets a Bronx cheer and then do the wave in elation in the same game? Like, that's what happened. I don't know. It didn't. We watched the game from television today, and you didn't see it on television. But for a good chunk of the third period, we literally had the wave going.
It did seem like a really good crowd.
And the first period, we're giving them the Bronx cheer for the first shot on goal after whatever it was, 13, 14 minutes. You know, nobody likes to see the big goose egg up on the shot board for the better half of the first period. But the Jets weren't you know, they were in the offensive zone. They created some chances, didn't get the puck on the net. I didn't see there being a big problem at that point. But this was a crew who showed up. And again, they were angry enough to do the Bronx cheer and happy enough to do the wave all in the same game. Never say fandom is rational.
So two things. I'm going to openly admit that I had to Google what a Bronx cheer was. I'd never heard that term before. Wheeler used it, and then Twitter was on fire. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. The second part of it is, regardless, to me, the best outcome, and this is somewhat out of the box, is that the crowd seemed, and you can confirm or deny this, alive. I've been to a number of games lately where we don't sort of come to life until midway through the third, but it seemed to me, even the fact that we were giving a Bronx cheer, like it gets pretty quiet pretty quick through the first and second periods. So I was just happy that we were, as fans, engaged. Was that the case?
I think it was, and I think it is off the tail of the good play within the recent spate of games. I think it really, I think beating Tampa 7-4 in convincing fashion really woke people up. Now, I'm not suggesting it's going to turn our season around and we're suddenly going to be challenging in the playoffs. I'm not saying that. But in terms of looking at what this team is and has, I think it opened the eyes and it said, listen, it gave us license to have fun again when we go back to the rink, because this team can be fun to watch when they have their entire lineup.
And that was a fun game.
And that was a fun game. Tampa was a fun game. I even think it would have been half enjoyable to see the Rangers game. Not fully enjoyable, because they just pummeled the Rangers, right? And the St. Louis game was a very good performance. Now, we watched that one on television, right? But still, that's the mindset going into that game against Vegas at home.
Yeah, no,
right?
I like it.
We're coming off that big win in St. Louis. We've just had this big win against Tampa. You know, we've complemented that with victories over the Devils and strong performances before that. Yeah, you know, the Islanders wasn't great, but you know, that's one game. I think there was enough recent strong performances that people were a little excited. And no masks.
Oh.
COVID is over,
it's
Mike.
It's done.
We've defeated it. It's gone.
We picked an arbitrary line in the sand, and now it is over.
That's right.
What was the ratio to mask to no mask?
There was a fair bit of no mask. I'm kind of expecting no one to wear masks. So when 25 to 40% of people are wearing masks all the time, you're kind of like, oh, okay, people are, yeah, this is okay. Huh. But there were lots of people there with no masks.
Okay, so should we do Return of the Mac?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Dan Wilton, the proprietor and founder of the Whack to Mac Continuum, had reached out and provided some qualifications for us. So my understanding now is that we were using it maybe somewhat loosely and flippantly. It is, am I getting this right? It is the whack to Mac continuum, whack being a 0 and Mac being a 10?
I think we can go with that, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to go. These 7 games, I'm going 8.5.
Whoa.
I enjoyed almost all of it, and we look like, not the team of old, but there's a pep in our step, and we've had some bad bounces, and I think Ehlers being back, he's one of my favorite Jets. I just really enjoyed the slate of games, the Islanders game being sort of the one turd in the punch bowl, but I could do that over and over again. I don't know, you know, we won all these games, and our playoff rivals, quote-unquote, have fallen to a certain degree. Dallas has stumbled, Vegas has stumbled, and we're still between, depending on what algorithm you look at, an 8-12% chance of making the playoffs. But I'm now a little more bought in that it's a possibility, because if we can continue playing this way and we get some luck, we are in playoff contention, or it is a playoff race, not just a pie in the sky idea.
Interesting. I don't disagree with any of that. I think it's a very strong score. I only went up to a 7. On the MacWack continuum. Some of the best and some of the most disappointing from the Jets during that series of games. You know, the Dallas game was disappointing. I think you need to take that. You can't just continue to lose to a division rival in overtime. So I penalized them for that. I also penalized them I didn't penalize them in my tiny brain for losing to the Rangers as much as I penalized them for losing to the Islanders, because the process was so different. Listen, we play as good as we do, or as we did against the Rangers all the time, we're a playoff team.
We're going to be tough to beat, yeah.
We're going to be tough to beat. And every once in a while, a goalie is going to rise to the occasion, and he's going to shut us down. And a mentally tough team will just shrug it off, process. The goalies will not be able to do that night after night after night. In fact, they won't, and they'll let in a whole bunch on a bunch of nights, right? We'll win far more than we lose if we play like we did against the Rangers. The process was not good against the Islanders. And it was touch and go against the Devils. It wasn't the best game. They found a way to win. I do like the fact that they won a game when they only scored two goals. That was a good thing.
Yeah, rarity.
A rarity. So I do think that there was more good than bad, but there was enough that was still, you know, good. Once again, just good enough to make you really disappointed as to where they stand in the playoff race. So that's what kind of hurt their score to me. But, you know, I got to give them full credit. There were some really good ones in there. I just hopefully with them getting their full lineup back, we'll see more of it in the last 22 games I think we have left.
Yeah. It's fine, Vaughn. I'm just more positive on the Jets than you are.
Well, you
mark that down as a first.
You're just more positive.
Okay, should we do pre-boarding announcements?
Let's do it.
All right. You want to kick off first class?
Sure. First class assignment brought to you by First Mining Gold, providing first class gold mining development advice and services since 2015. Do you mind?
Giver, you teased this before we started recording, so I'm.
Well, no, the real controversy will come in the penalty box. Okay. But I'm going to pick low-hanging fruit here. I'm going to say Nick Ehlers. The Jets are definitely a different team with this guy in the lineup. He looked good with Lowry and Kopp, two guys that can create some space for him. And I also really like him on the PLD Connor line. And that's a formidable threesome. Also the name of Mike's sex tape. So low-hanging fruit there. I went Nick Ehlers. Who do you got going up into first class?
First of all, that's the worst-selling one of all time. I'll say that right now. So
of all your sex tapes, that's the worst-selling one?
Of all in the world. So okay. I wanted to clear excuse me. I wanted to clear the air. So I'll tease my picks, Blake Wheeler.
Oh.
Yeah, but I'm gonna tease something out. I had, on our Airport Lounge account, I had posted some PLD stats, so I was going to pick PLD just to redeem myself a little bit. And I got, you know, we had a listener, I think, or someone who just follows us on Twitter. I basically indicated that I was going through, I was writing an article, and I was pouring through some stats. And I did notice that PLD has a significant portion of his goals have come either on the power play or in overtime. So basically not even strength. And someone responded and said, well, a goal is a goal. First of all, thanks. Great analysis.
Breaking news.
Way to break that down for me. But I responded, and I think I responded incorrectly. I was trying to correct the overall point where it's like, yes, a goal is a goal. But in my opinion, a 5-on-5 goal is more valuable in many instances because you spend more time on 5-on-5, and that's where games are won and lost. You know, obviously special teams count and matter, but that was the point I was trying to make, and it did come off as PLD is not good 5-on-5. And I do think that PLD has had lulls this year, 5-on-5, but, you know, his expected goals, he's a -7 expected goals 5-on-5. That doesn't mean that he's not driving play and playing well. It just means that he has been much less fortunate 5-on-5 because his expected goals on the power play are +5, meaning he scored 5 more goals than theoretically he probably should have. So that was my only point, and I wanted to clear the air because both yourself and Rich and our friend Rich, I think he's very subtle. But I think he was absolutely disgusted with what he thought my take was.
I think he was, too. I mean, it's just a different way of looking at it. I mean, I think he's been a little bit snake bit on 5-on-5. He creates great chances. They haven't been going to the back of the net for him. And, you know, I do, I've been meaning to check, but I think Kyle Connor's been pretty productive 5-on-5. So, I mean, you can't detach the two of them in the sense that, you know, it's quite probable that PLD is doing things 5-on-5 to free up room for Connor to score, right? So, but yeah, I mean, it was just an interesting little way of, you know, flipping a number and taking a look at it in a different way. I wasn't particularly, insulted by it, but yeah, that's a great description of why Blake Wheeler should be in first class assignment.
Yes.
No, but it was an interesting choice. Please tell me.
I'll put it as succinctly as possible. He's back checking. He's forechecking. He's going coast to coast and sniping. And he's being a dick to the media. He's reverted time, and he's gone back to 3 years ago, Blake Wheeler. I mean, I say that somewhat facetiously because he does still have many lulls in play. But I think both you and I noticed there were several instances of really sort of aggressive backchecking and forechecking, yes. And we have been on him for years, and so when his play improves, I think it's noteworthy or worthwhile to give him a promotion. So we'll put him in first class. He can have the handicap seat and spread his legs so his joints don't get sore, and he can enjoy a good meal.
Awesome. I do think, and we'll get into this because we'll in our 5-on-5 a little bit, but I'll just tease it out a little bit here. I do think putting Ehlers with PLD and Connor and that really starting to look like a first line may have kind of lit a bit of a fire under. Under Scheifele and
conspiratorial under nature.
I love it. All right, let's go to the penalty box. Okay. I'll quickly introduce it. You go first. I'll go second. Okay, penalty box. One. Hey, their checks keep cashing.
Okay.
Brought to you by Charlie's Coffin Confectionery. You kill them, we fill them. Come check out our selection. It's deadly. Visit our showroom at the intersection of Departed Boulevard and Oblivion Road.
I love Week Off Vaughn. It's fantastic. So I'll keep mine short and simple. I'm going Connor Hellebuyck. I know you did that last week. Again, let's be clear. Is Connor Hellebuyck the problem?
No.
Is it something that we all need to pull our hair out over? No. Has he been really, really good for a long time? Absolutely. But it's been a weak stretch here. And it's less the, well, taken out of context, he's still very good. He hasn't been very good. He's been barely above average. Mm-hmm. And the stats back that up. And again, it's low-hanging fruit, but the one game where we only let in one goal was the one game where he was not the goalie. It's not hard. This isn't hard analysis. And he, you know, if we want to have any chance of making a playoff push, he's got to be better. And he doesn't look as sturdy or as confident. I'm not a goaltender, so that's the extent of my analysis. But sorry, Connor, you're in the penalty box this week.
I think there's a lot of merit to that. I'm just looking back here at the numbers. Going back to game 52 against Colorado, he had an .857 save percentage. And then after that, .897, then .886, then .882, then .818, then .833. And then Comrie was a net, had a .971 save percentage. Hmm. Back to Hellebuyck, .868, .903 against St. Louis, and then up to a .921 against Vegas. So that's not the strongest level of performances for a Vezina winning goaltender. Okay, so I think, yeah, I mean, this is not something that's been fully resolved. I hope he can build on the success he had against Vegas. And we can carry that going forward because the team in front of him is playing pretty well. And those things are related. Now, I'm going to stir the pot a little bit here. Okay. For my penalty box, I'm going to put in the penalty box Stacey Natras.
Oh, you did it.
Listen, Mike.
You did it.
We all know O Canada is a formal march done in 4/4 time, which is best sung in the key of F, E, or even E flat.
Okay? I know none of those things, so your point is lost on me. But continue.
Oh, I Googled that. I have no idea what that means. No, but seriously, I thought we often talk about it and we tease one another back and forth. Mike is a fan. I'm less of a fan. I do acknowledge she's gotten better over the years and she seems to take her job very seriously. But it's just kind of become this, not a bone of contention, but just this playful thing we have back and forth. So when I was kind of struggling, because this has been a pretty good stretch of games for the Jets, and I was kind of struggling to find someone that I'd drop into the penalty box because I'd already dropped Connor Hellebuck last time.
Yeah.
I thought I'd have some fun and throw Stacey Natras out there. I mean, it's our anthem singer. I mean, we're just having fun here. But if I had to choose someone from the on-ice personnel, I'm going to penalize Logan Stanley. Why?
Oh.
Why? For giving his cheerleading crew some anecdotal evidence to keep him in the lineup. He literally got a Gordie Howe hat trick. Logan Stanley got a Gordie Howe hat trick. Come on, man. We're going to be hearing about this for the next 2 years. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think he's playing for the Winnipeg Monarchs now. That's how far they've sent Ville Heinola down.
They never need him.
Logan Stanley is never coming out of the lineup again, and I am, and we're going to rue this day that Logan Stanley at home in front of a packed house gets a Gordie Howe hat trick. Like, I mean, we're better off just packing up and moving on at this point because it's never going to happen again.
Yeah, it's very rare, almost an impossibility that I don't celebrate vigorously after a Jets goal. But when he scored, I just gave my head a shake. I was like, well, that's it. You know, it was a nice goal. I'll give him credit.
Sure.
I mean, he misses 40% of the shots he takes. So, you know, you're bound to get lucky once or twice. And I immediately thought, I was like, well, that's it. Exactly like you said, he's never coming out of the lineup. And I'm like, Halen's gone. Sure enough, next day, down to the Moose. So I could not agree with you more on that one.
All right, let's move on to in-flight entertainment. All right, Mike, five questions in relatively rapid fire.
Okay.
I got a good one to start. Are the Jets currently well coached? You go first because I got a good answer for this one.
No, there have been improvements, but I think when Maurice left, there wasn't anywhere to go but up. And I think Ehlers' ice time is a perfect example to me in that I understand the first game and a half, that you play him on the third line, you keep his minutes down, keep him rested. But I think that if Kopp hadn't got hurt, or if there hadn't been sort of mitigating circumstances, he would have continued to been iced the sixth or seventh most of our forwards. I think there's some tendencies in terms of deference to Wheeler and Scheifele that is evident, and it's a hangover from the Maurice days. I think there's been some steady improvement, which is great. Obviously, I do not believe that he is a long-term solution. And I think if we look at it comparatively to the other teams in the league, I think that he's below average. And so, obviously, then the answer is no.
Fair enough. Now, I wanted to ask a provocative question because I'm going to go yes. And here's why.
Oh.
Since Lowry has come on board, the penalty killing has been fixed. Just right out fixed. There's enough evidence to say now that it is fixed. If you take a look at the rate we've been running since the Seattle game, it would be one or two in the entire league if we were to extrapolate that over the entire season. And there are multiple categories when we're in where we are in the top five in the league. You look at the power play. Again, it has improved since Lowry has taken over. Again, it is around 10th in the league, but there are multiple categories in which it's in top five, including Corsi four percentage.
Yeah, I did see that.
Expected goals for were 5th in the league. You know, so I tracked this from December 20th to March 11th. It's a little dated, but I have a color coding that it's gone. The penalty kill has gone from all red, which is in the bottom third of the league, to a bunch of green categories, including being first in the league in expected goals for. Now, that's not something you necessarily hang your hat on.
Yeah, I was just going to ask.
Right?
If that was taken into account.
But the point is, we went from 20th to first, right? And that we've scored again on the penalty kill since that time. The power play has improved since he's come in. Even strength is where things are a little bit more murky, and I'm going to say that that's attributable to injuries over the course of that time, something that Maurice didn't he had to deal with a couple COVID things, yes, but there has been more injuries and more disruption to the lineup, I think, under Lowry than under Maurice. And finally, as we alluded to earlier, I like how he subtly put the return of Ehlers with PLD and Connor. I think that's sending a message. I don't think that you could come in and overturn the apple cart in the dressing room all in one shake. I think he's doing it slowly on some things. I'm not making a pitch to say Lowry should be hired and this crew retained for next year. I think we can do better, but the question is, are we well coached at the moment? And I think there is reasonable evidence to say yes, we are.
Okay. Well, we could ramble back and forth for 15 minutes.
Really
good conversation, and you made some really good points. Quick rebuttal in terms of some of the penalty kill and power play. I struggle sometimes with what the proper sample size is, because just from an eye test, I don't see too much difference in terms of structure, only the fact that Adam Lowry has morphed into probably the greatest penalty killer of all time, which
greatest
really helps.
Of all time,
but,
yeah.
But your points are well taken. The next one on our list was with Copp's very unfortunate injury, and I wish him well. What does the trade market look like for him, and should we trade him?
Oh boy, I'll be super quick. I think this is going to scare off everybody. And I think that he won't get traded. And that doesn't mean people say, well, why not just trade him for a seventh round pick? Well, we have 21 games left, and I want a good team to be fielded for those 21 games. Like, I don't care about that seventh round pick. And people are to say, well, asset management, at least it's something, and it's not nothing, and it's pretty much nothing. It's a lottery ticket.
It is, yeah.
It's a lottery ticket. So I don't think he's going to be moved, and I don't know what the reality is. People say, well, he's gone. I would agree that the probability is that he is not re-signing with the Jets, but I don't think it's 0%, and it's possible. Perhaps teams, if they can't trade him because of concussions, then why are teams going to sign him?
Yeah, it hurts his market, and I feel bad for him. But
that's the reality
of it, is that concussions, especially in a second one in a short period, are not. Obviously, everyone casts it's a tough go. And I agree with you 100%. I don't want to trade him just to trade him, and getting 6th, 7th round picks don't mean,
because we're not getting a first round pick for him anymore.
We're not.
That ship has sailed.
I don't think we're getting. No. And so past that, I'm not really worried about, you know, getting a 3rd round pick for Copp. If it makes the end of the season more exciting, it might be just the fan in me and less the analytical mind, but let's do that.
I agree. Okay. Should the Jets, we're speaking about the trade deadline here because it's looming. I think it's on Monday.
Yeah.
Should the Jets trade Paul Stastny at the trade deadline?
Oh, I'm flip-flopping like a fish out of water on this one, because my initial stance was sell everyone you can, get some assets, rework, retool. But again, I don't know what we can get for Paul Stastny. I would be very surprised if it fetched anything close to a second rounder, and so you never know. The trade market's tight, and desperate times call for desperate measures. I don't know. I guess I'll answer your question with a question. I don't think he's going to sign this year. I think the Jets would like it. He'd probably come back on a one-year deal. He seems to like it here. And he's probably going to run for politics at some point. Geez. But again, same with the Copp thing. If we can't fetch something half-decent that has a reasonable shot of being a good prospect, then I don't really see the point. But if we get a 5th rounder for him, I'm not, like, that's totally fine with me.
Yeah, I have a little bit different view of Stastny than Copp, and the reason isn't that I wish that Copp was 100% healthy and we could leverage his UFA status to get us a good haul.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's going to happen. Paul Stastny is having a very good year. I am consistently impressed with the details he brings in support of Scheifele and Wheeler. I think he does a lot to keep those guys out of trouble. He's like the bouncer that follows them around, the big brother, and makes sure that they don't get into too much trouble.
Do you enjoy pain?
Pain don't hurt.
I think it will be difficult, more because of his age, to get a good haul at the trade deadline. It's interesting. You don't need 10 teams to fall in love with him. You just need one, right? Should we trade Paul Stastny at the deadline? I think so, because I think this is as good as he's going to be going forward. I think that I don't even
know if
you're
going to get any market value. Yeah.
Exactly. It's going to be now. And, you know, I think Kopp, like if we're going to take a run at one of those two guys in the offseason, spend that money on Kopp, not on Stastny.
Yes, thank you.
And so if Stastny isn't potentially in the plans next year, I think that he's the more likely trade guy at this point than Kopp. And I think we could survive. Well, I mean, he is doing a lot. He is doing a lot, and it's just the concussion thing for me. I think that it depends on what the market says. If we do both, if we could trade both, the haul should be considerable. But if the market isn't there, I don't think we should trade either. I don't think we should trade them just for trading them. Anyways, what do you think, Mike?
I think that trading just for a fifth-round pick, again, Stastny, I'm less worried about. I wouldn't mind, with the right price under the right circumstances, bringing Kopp back. So if there's a chance for that and a better chance through keeping him and not trading him now, then I don't think it hurts, because, as you know, as we've articulated, we're not going to get fair market value for him right now anyway. So you never
that's a great point. That's a great point. That's a great point. If we traded if we traded Kopp now, we would be, you know, selling low. If we traded Stastny now, we'd be selling high.
Selling high.
I think, I think that's a great analogy, and I agree wholeheartedly. How much of the Jets' lack of success this season would you place on goaltending?
Now, if I'm a personification of Twitter, I would say all of it, 100%.
Yeah.
The Jets are an excellent team, and Connor Hellebuck sucks. So that's not true.
That pretty much sums it up, though, in terms of the Twitterverse.
In terms of the discourse? I think in these past, let's say, 14, 15 games, I would put that at probably, you know, if we're signing percentages, I would arbitrarily put 25 to 30%. I think he's cost us some games. But I think at the beginning, and I wrote about this, I think his demise was overstated. And I think if you looked at the comparables from this year to last year and the year prior, you know, where he won a Vezina, it wasn't very far off. And so some of those earlier games, I think we were just playing very poorly in front of him. So, you know, I think overall then, you know, I think it's probably a 10 to 15% attributable cause to poor goaltending this year.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. And I'm not comfortable placing it all. I mean, you can look at this one of two ways. I think the slight decline in the overall level of play from Connor Hellebuck has had a massive impact on not being where we want to be in the standings. There hasn't been enough times where he's risen to the occasion and just had a freakish night that we've kind of become accustomed and perhaps addicted
fair,
to.
Fair.
So it's not, I'm just saying that, you know, when the line between winning and losing is razor thin, and you get a small decline or you know, a slightly appreciable decline in goaltending from your top goalie, you know, that can be the difference on a lot of nights. And as we've talked about, you know, there's this magic threshold, you know, of when the Jets, how much the Jets score. If they can get over this hump, he tends to let a couple too many in, but keeps the number of goals he lets in down enough. So if the Jets are doing what they can do in the offensive end of the ice, they're going to win a big chunk of the games. Like, their record when scoring three or more is 26-3-5. Now, it's only 5-3-4 when they just score three goals, but, you know, so he's not stealing games. That's what those numbers tell me. When the Jets score two or less, their record is 2-20-5, right? So he's not just outright stealing games for them. And at least one of those two games when the Jets scored two or less, it was Comrie, right? So he's struggled and kind of flirted on one side of the line or other. We needed him to step up. Just like, listen, we need Mark Scheifele to play at a certain level. We need Kyle Connor to play at a certain level. We need to play have Josh Morrissey play at a certain level. He's no different, and he hasn't been playing up to his full ability enough times. Everyone understands a night off here or there or a bad night here or there, but he's been quite average for too many games.
Yeah, and great point. And I approached it, and I think there was a little bit of gap in my analysis there, because I approached it and didn't think about it in the same context where he hasn't stolen games, and in the past he's stolen quite a few games, and it's a good way to look at it, because you're absolutely right. That hasn't been something that's happened frequently or at all this year. I was analyzing it more as, is he an above-average goalie? Yes. At the beginning of the year, he had sort of really, his first three games were really rough. And then he settled in, and his expected goals, like he was in the 8-9 range of goalies. Not elite, but very good. Mm-hmm. And this past month or so has been average to maybe a little bit above average. And so I translated that into games. But it's an excellent point. We rely on him too much. And so we could be in a much better place if he had stolen three games.
We're
in a wild card spot. It's a great point.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Who do you prefer to play with, PLD and Connor? Would you put the third as Ehlers or Svechnikov? Who do you prefer?
I'm going to keep this really short because this is insulting. It's Ehlers and it's not even close. I like Svechnikov, not when he's taking 10-minute misconduct penalties and doing boneheaded things, but I think he's a very serviceable NHL player. You know, if we can give Ehlers time to blossom even further on this line, I think we really have something, and I don't think we should touch it for the rest of the season, and I think going into next season, that should be our first priority. Okay, this is our first line now. We're turning a page. These are our guys. And so for that reason, 1,000% for me, Ehlers.
I completely agree. I think we're seeing the transition of the first line. Yeah. I think there's been enough time where Ehlers has played with Scheifele and Wheeler, and they haven't had much of an interest in supporting him or integrating him in their doing. There isn't a good fit there.
They're doing their own thing.
I think they're doing their own thing, and I think they've been quite obstinate in regards to trying to build that on-ice relationship with Nick Ehlers. Listen, they may be fast friends off the ice, but there's not that chemistry on the ice. And I do think that if we really want to get Scheifele and Wheeler thinking differently about their roles and holding them to an account in a different way than they've been held in the past, which has been zero, right? If we want
literally
those guys to play a more 200-foot game, which we've been seeing in more spurts recently, putting Ehlers with PLD and Connor sends a message, you know, that's going to be line one. Things are changing. You can get with the program, the rest of you, or not. I also think Svechnikov would be a great compliment to Adam Lowry.
Yes, and, thank you. That was
and Kopp or even Harkins on that line.
Yeah.
I think that is a fine third line. So there's other places for Svechnikov in this lineup where I think he can be really effective. So, all right, shall we move on to last call? I'll just do a quick update as to where we're going, where we're at, and where we're going, and then we'll do the sign off.
Sure,
sound
absolutely
good?
Yeah, perfect.
Last call. All right, so the Jets currently sit with a record of 28-23-10. That's good for 66 points and 6th in the division and 11th in the conference. This places us at the moment 2 points behind Vegas for the last wild card playoff spot.
Yeah,
Dallas is 1 point ahead of us but has 3 games in hand. So what's coming up? We got Boston on Friday, another IPA eye test in-house viewing for Vaughn Mitchell. So Boston on Friday at home,
Bastard.
In Chicago on Sunday, and then a 4-game homestand including games against Vegas, Ottawa, Columbus, and then Arizona. This seems to be a stretch of games in which we might be able to collect some valuable points. So, again, we always seem to break it down. You know, this is the next set of games where it's really going to define our season. Well, I think we're kind of there again. You know, we're flirting with this idea of a wild card spot. Well, we got to make some hay in this next stretch of games.
Yes, 1,000%. And obviously the Vegas game being another key one. We tend to, after a very good outing against division rivals, tend to lapse back to old and terrible tendencies, and we tend to get our clock cleaned. But I mean, I'm hoping this iteration of the Jets, there's some very beatable teams in there, and especially with the number of home games, it's all there, right? Even if we don't make the playoffs, I'm now in the camp of, more in your camp, let's just make it exciting. Let's make a push. You know what I mean? I'll be really disappointed, and this is very sort of, very obvious, but I'm going to be disappointed if we lose, you know, 80% of our games in the next week or two, because, again, for the first time in a while, I'm excited. I'm excited to go to the games. I'm excited of the prospect that playoffs or not, that we're acquitting ourselves well here as we sort of turn the corner.
Well, at the end of the day, it's just entertainment, and I want to enjoy it. And you know what? I don't feel like a more complete person if the Jets make the playoffs or not. In fact, I'm a poorer person because I have to pay for playoff tickets. You know, and as you know, Mike can afford it.
Oh,
I can't.
Knew it. I was.
Well, it was an apt way to sort of just segue into the sign off. You know, bring it full circle, and we've closed that loop, and now we can sign off.
Well played, sir.
So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple, Spotify, and Overcast Podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge, because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets, go.